When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This podcast is sponsored by Hollywood Casino in Charlestown, West Virginia. April's featured entertainment includes Los Lobos on the 12th, Josh Turner on the 13th, and The Steel Woods on the 26th. Details and tickets at HollywoodCasinoCharlestown.com. Must be 21 to enter the casino floor and attend a show. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Welcome to the newest episode of Beyond the Fame with Jason Fraley. I'm your host, Jason Fraley, picking the brains of the top filmmakers, musicians, and artists of our time. Tomorrow is National Submarine Day, so we're doing a deep dive on the Jude Law submarine flick Black Sea. I spoke with filmmaker Kevin McDonald when he visited Washington, D.C. to promote the film back in 2015.
I had a croissant for breakfast this morning, which was surprisingly good for an American.
You know what? Croissant. We don't even need to do the interview now. Like, that's the... Give him the Oscar for the croissant. You just mentioned State of Play here in D.C. Welcome back to Washington. Is this your first time back since that movie?
Yeah. No, I was here for, you know, off and on for like 6-7 weeks or something when I was shooting State of Play with Ben Affleck, Russell Crowe, and a few people back in 2008 or 9. And I grew to really love the place, actually. I spent a lot of time hanging out at the Washington Post. And, you know, it's a film about journalism and a kind of thriller set in the world of journalism.
Did you did you do a lot of All the President's Men watching for the
Washington?
Oh, yeah,
totally. Totally. I was saying that actually I got, as my gift to all the crew or to the main members of the crew and the cast, I got them all a signed copy of All the President's Men, which Ben Bradley and Woodward and Bernstein all signed. And
wow.
I sent somebody around to all their houses to get them to sign it. And then Bradley just died recently, didn't he?
Yeah, what was going to ask you as a follow-up.
I met him. He was an incredible guy.
Was he there a lot while you were shooting?
I met him a couple of times. Like I had dinner with him once and met him on another occasion at a party. He was already pretty elderly guy, but incredibly opinionated, smart, funny. Exactly what an old-time newspaper editor ought to be like. Basically, he lived up to the hype.
And what were your thoughts? Do you remember where you were when you heard he passed? Or what were your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I was in London at home, and it just felt like that's the end of a certain era in old school journalism, isn't it? But I'm excited to see what happens now that Jeff Bezos has got the Post and what that's going to do. Hopefully, he's going to reinvent journalism, make it more. More relevant to people again. It seems like it's fallen away a bit in the last few years.
Yeah, well, I mean, if there's anyone to kind of guide its, you know, transition into the tech age, digital age, it's him, you know.
Yeah.
Well, welcome back then.
Thank you.
You just got in last night, you said.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your movie, Black Sea.
Mm.
How did you, just from the very beginning, how did this script by Dennis Kelly come to your attention? I mean, how did you...
Well, it was my idea, actually. It was an idea I had. Oh, okay. I wanted to make a submarine movie. It's like a genre I love because...
Do you like Hunt for Red October?
Or there's a sort of list of the great submarine movies. There's Crimson Tide, there's Hunt for Red October, there's Das Boot, the German film about the U-boats. There's Run Silent, Run Deep with Clark Gable, which is a great movie from the late 50s, I think it is.
You had to pick one, I mean, is it Das Boot?
I think it would probably have to be Das Boot because that's the most... naturalistic
replication.
Yeah, Wolfgang Peterson, like 1982 or something like that.
And I think it's 81.
Oh, okay.
Pardon me.
I'm wrong. I'm out by a year. It's a genre I like, but particularly I read about the Kursk disaster, which was a disaster that happened in the Barents Sea, north of Russia. A Russian submarine went down in 2000 after an explosion, I think, and it ended up on the bottom of the ocean floor, a long way down, several hundred meters down. And some of the submariners survived for several days in one of the compartments. And they had enough oxygen, but it slowly ran out. And then before the rescuers could get to them, they died. And I thought, that's got to be one of the worst deaths you can possibly imagine.
No doubt about it.
But I thought there's also, that's a movie. Maybe there's a movie in there about people trapped on the bottom of the ocean in a submarine. And I started to think, what are they doing there? Well, it'd be interesting if they weren't military, if they're not naval people. What if they're looking for treasure? So it turned into this kind of heist movie stroke action adventure movie.
Right, yeah. I mean, I feel like a lot of them are just the straight military submarine type thing.
Yeah, I think this is the first non-military submarine movie, because these guys are all ex-Navy guys. There's not to give too much of the plot away, but half the crew are Russian. Half the crew are English-speaking. And they've all, both the Russians and the English speakers, have all been in the Navy at one time or another, but they've all now gone into civilian life and they're working in salvage. They're kind of scraping a living. None of them are doing very well. And so it's a kind of, I guess there's a Dirty Dozen element these guys get together. They need the Russians because they get this old Russian submarine, which they need to get under the Russian fleet in the Black Sea to get to where they think this treasure is going to be. And then they end up having a bit of an accident, ending up trapped on the bottom of the ocean floor, but they can't tell anyone that they're there, or they have a radio, but they couldn't tell anyone anyway because they're there illegally.
Nice. You just listed a handful of your favorite ones. What is it about that genre, or I guess subgenre, like that, that attracts you? Is it just the idea of shooting a self-contained story that's almost the claustrophobia of it, or what do you think it is?
Well, I think it's a lot of things. I think it's like it's man against the elements in a way, man against nature. Which always makes a great story. I mean, it's like space movies are like that too. Yeah. You know, your Gravity or Interstellar. You know, a big part of the attraction is that it's people somewhere where they shouldn't be. Right. You know, you're in space, but you can't really survive in space unless you've got this spaceship or in a submarine. You know, the submarine, or you've got a spacesuit, or you've got a diving suit, or whatever. And the fact that there is death all around you.
Right.
There's nothing around you but cold, dark death, as one of the characters says.
You're not swimming out of there.
You're not swimming out of there because you die. You couldn't get up. The pressure would kill you. But so I think it's that, and it's the claustrophobia also does interesting things to characters. You know, you put people together in a confined space, and friction begins, and you get interesting character things coming out.
Cabin fever type thing.
You get cabin fever. I mean, a lot of submarine movies share kind of certain traits. You know, there's often an element of Captain Ahab to somebody, you know, of Moby Dick, you know, of people who are obsessive.
You're a Jules Verne guy too? I mean, 20,000 Leagues.
Yeah, of course. That's a slightly different thing, but I love that science fiction. Sure. Yeah, no, I love that. And I remember reading that book as a kid, and the wonder of the idea of living permanently under the sea, and coming into contact with a giant squid and the narwhal and all these things. But yeah, this is a little more tense and claustrophobic. Right. This movie. There's not much nature in it, and it's the claustrophobia. Yeah, it makes everything tense. You know, it's like in Das Boot, the submarine, great German submarine movie. You can watch the guys cooking a meal or darning their socks, and it's tense somehow because of where they are.
Right. I want to talk to you about Jude Law in a minute, but. In terms of like just the ensemble of the cast, how do you get them into that space? Because you know they're really just shooting a movie. They're on, you know, but how do you get them into that mindset of being claustrophobic? Like guys have been underwater for how long? You know, how do you get them to have that reaction?
Well, it's pretty easy because for two things we did. First of all, we had a submarine expert or two submarine experts who came and kind of lectured everybody before we started work. On how submarine works and answered questions and also took every member of the cast aside and said, okay, your job in the movie is you're the navigator, for instance, or you look after the diesel engines or you look after the electric engines. And it would explain to them exactly how this worked and what they would be doing. Yeah. So that was very helpful. But more than anything else, there's direct experience on a submarine. So Jude Law, who stars in the movie, went actually for 5 days on a real Royal Navy submarine. They picked him up in the Mediterranean Sea. He told me that the subs have came up in front of him in that classic way, and he clambered on board, and the stench of all the men as he opened the hatch, you know, he said it was unbelievable, the smell coming off, because nobody showers in those things for months.
How long was he down there?
He was down for 5 days, I think. Didn't know where he went, because they don't tell you. It's all top secret where you're going. So he did that. But then We actually filmed for 2 weeks. The first 2 weeks of the film, we shot in a real submarine.
Cool.
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
I'm Bradley Trainer,
and I'm Don McClain. We have a podcast called Blinded by the Item.
A blind item is gossip about a celebrity with their name left out. It's a guessing game, and you can play along. The item might be like, this A-list star carries a Birkin bag worth more than the average person's house to the gym to work out.
Pretty sure that's J-Lo.
And P.S. the person behind all of this is Kris Jenner,
LLC. We drop a new episode every weekday, so the fun never ends.
Blinded by the Item. Listen wherever you get podcasts and watch us on the Blinded by the Item YouTube channel.
So it was a real... The sub in the that they take in the movie is meant to be an old Russian diesel sub from the 60s. And that is exactly what we filmed on for the first 2 weeks. So
How did you get that?
Well, it turned out some... crazy collector, I guess there's no other way of putting it. A guy who was into military memorabilia, a British guy, had bought one in the early 90s when you could buy basically anything.
I'm just gonna, what the hell, I'm gonna buy a sub.
So he's got $100,000. He got a sub. They sailed it over from Russia, from Murmansk or wherever it was. They got as far as the English Channel and it sank. So they called him up and said, look, I'm really sorry. There's good news and bad news. The bad news is the sub sank. The good news is we've got 12 more back in Murmansk. We're going to get you another one. So they went back and got him another one. And he has it sitting there in this river, and he occasionally rents it out for parties. So it's kind of odd thing or photo shoot or something. But anyway, we found this thing, and we were just like, wow, this is incredible. So we have to film on it.
Did you shoot it in that river?
We shot it in the river. Because obviously when you're inside a sub, there's no windows. So you can be anywhere, and you can be underwater. But I think all the crew and all the cast really felt what it was like to be in a real sub. And you know, you close the hatch and you could be 200 meters down, you know, and you get a real sense of what it's like, the smell of diesel.
You remember the name of the river? Just so I can...
Yeah, it's
and like where exactly geographically?
Well, where it is, it's just outside London. It's actually sitting in the River Medway, which is part of the Thames estuary. So it's where the Thames River kind of feeds into the sea. And it's just in there. And nobody will let this submarine be in a proper dock because they're too scared it's going to sink because it looks like a rusting pile of crap.
Old, yeah.
And so he's had to have it sort of sitting on a buoy in the middle of the estuary. So it's just sitting there. So we had to build a pontoon around it so that we could have offices and toilets and whatever around the sub and have a boat take everyone out every day back and forth. So that's a pretty difficult, expensive thing. So that's why we only did it for 2 weeks. Also, you get pretty fed up of being, I mean, it's claustrophobic. It really
did
is.
Anyone freak? Did anyone freak after that hatch?
Nobody freaked. But I think it really affected the performances. I think in that indefinable sort of way that the actors really, I understood. When we went on to into the soundstage, we were filming on a set, then, you know, they knew
carry
what it was
them,
really
yeah.
like. And so, yeah, I think it's got a real authenticity, this movie.
It's really cool. How much production design do you have to do on the interior, or is it just the 60 sub?
Well, no, when we were filming on the 60 sub, all we had to do was make some of the lights work and things that didn't, put in a few other lights that weren't there, but, you know, looked kind of appropriate. But otherwise, just left. It was perfect. It's like a museum piece. It's absolutely beautiful. And extraordinary Soviet design, you know, it looks like the sailors departed. There's even like postcards and things that the sailors had in the 80s stuck still in some of the cabins, a little bit of softcore Soviet porn right. stuck out there. Sailors the world around, I guess, like that. So, it's a pretty amazing thing. And then we filmed, you know, at studio outside London, and then we filmed in a tank, and we did there's a big underwater kind of action sequence, which we filmed in the tank at Pinewood Studios, which is where they do like Star Wars and Bond and stuff.
Sure. Now you've a few years back, you did Last King of Scotland, and you directed Forrest Whitaker to an Oscar. Mm. Sort of coached him up to that, if you want to.
I know.
I'm gonna give you more credit than you want. How does that affect you in terms of having suddenly probably everyone wants to, you know, if you've coached one person to an Oscar, does that help you landing your lead role?
Yeah, I think it does. But I think obviously it's one of the strange things about awards, you know, they're kind of meaningless, but they do definitely help you.
Right.
And, you know, there's that was my first fiction film. I'd made a lot of documentaries.
Right.
before, and I'd won an Oscar for a documentary before, but that doesn't really count in the same way as, you know, suddenly you know everyone pays attention when you're making fiction films, and the actor wins an Oscar and stuff. So yeah, I've definitely found it easier since then.
For other filmmakers or wannabe filmmakers that might be listening to this, what is that secret for you, that for the director-actor relationship when you're on set? I mean, what do you, like, say you sit down with Jude Law to go over this part. Like, what's
well, this part is like Jude Law, like you've never seen him before. So it's a completely different version of this actor, which is pretty much the same as Forrest Whitaker. Forrest Whitaker was known as this kind of sweet, slightly lumbering, kind of gentle guy.
Right.
And everyone was so amazed that he did this, you know, scary, dark performance. And I think there's something really fun about doing that and working with an actor who's going to do something totally different and surprise people. And the secret is that they have to just inhabit the role. You know, they have to really, it can't just be, oh, I'm going to come in for 4 weeks and act and go away. They have to spend a long time researching and thinking about the character, and something strange happens after that. You know, they do begin to change. The actor changes into a slightly different person. So if you then, it's an interesting thing, if you get somebody to come back, as you often do in movies, to do like a little bit of ADR, you know, dialogue mm-hmm. recording later, mm-hmm. their voices have completely changed because they're a different person. You know, 4 months later when you're editing the movie and you think, oh, I need that line more clearly, or a new line there, and you get them back and they say a line and you're like, huh, that sounds like a different person. So that's the sign of a good performance, I think, when the actor has really immersed themselves in it. And I think Jude does that in this.
How did, going more into his casting, I mean, were there other people you considered for the role and he just stood out? Or was
there were other people I considered. I wanted it to be British. I wanted it to be somebody British, and there aren't that many British stars, you know, who have the kind of recognition around the world, and Jude's one of them. But it wasn't an obvious choice for him. You know, he's known for kind of being this kind of romantic lead and being this sort of super good-looking, kind of witty guy in the Sherlock Holmes movies or whatever, but this was a part to play a real blue-collar guy, a tough guy, and
alienated his family.
Yeah, alienated from his family, and you know it's a total change for him. And Jude kind of persuaded me when I met him and to talk about it. You know, I went in a bit skeptical, not sure if he can is so different than who he is, but I came out feeling. Bit like with Forrest Whitaker, I came out feeling like, wow, this guy's really going to go all out to give me something incredible.
He'd be a great cast against type.
Exactly. He looks like such a tough, authoritative guy in the movie, and he's the leader of this gang of sort of kind of no-hoper ex-military guy, ex-Navy guys, and he carries that authority brilliantly. You know, he doesn't have to say anything, but you can see that they're going to obey what he asks them to do. And you know, he put on a lot of muscle, particularly kind of in his forearms and his back, so he looks a little more sailor. He shaved his head, he aged himself a little bit, he dropped the tone of his voice by a few, you know, half an octave or something. He adopts this Scottish accent, this very specific Aberdeen Scottish accent. So he's kind of like, you will see the movie and you will not really recognize it's him.
Nice. And then how do you go, I know part of your, you know, you take the hat off of the working with actors thing, like, you know, you go out onto the set and you're talking to them, blocking them. But then when you come back, how do you switch hats when you're at the monitor then to, you know, your storyboarding and your framing and creating that claustrophobic thing? It's not only that you're shooting underneath on the sub, but visually, how did you construct all your images? You know, how what was that process?
Well, in some ways in this movie, it was easier than it normally is because you've got no choice where to put the camera. In the real submarine, you know, it's so cramped that, you know, by the time you got a few actors and a few members of the crew, like, there's nowhere to move.
Right.
And so I decided to keep that. When I got on the set, I could have, you know, removed the wall and sort of swung the camera around, but I decided not to. I decided, look, actually, what's great is the claustrophobia, is the feeling that this camera is inside the set with you. And if you, I did try a couple of times taking it out of the set and sort of looking in, doing a shot that basically would be impossible in a real submarine, but it broke the spell immediately. And so I never used those shots. And so, yeah, it was the visual style that came about was just forced upon you in a way by the size and the claustrophobia of the set.
Thanks so much for listening to Beyond the Fame with Jason Fraley. Our theme music is Scott Buckley's Clarion. Remember to give us a 5-star rating if you like what you hear. We'll see you next time.